Okay. Are we ready?
We are ready, sir.
Have we all done that funny acting thing where we make funny noises and wave our hands around?
Lion face. Roar. Lemon face.
Yes. What the actual?
Have we all done our Terry Thomas imitations?
Oh boy.
This is a great Deep Space Nine episode.
What is that?
Deep does the worst.
Leghorn?
Deep does the worst.
Just fuck on
Terry
Lego.
Thomas ever.
I say, oh boy.
Dave does the Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Yes, I'm doing the Colonel Sanders. Enjoy my biscuits and gravy with my compliments. I'm going to have a mint julep.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert. All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
You Starfleet officers, now start acting like it.
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple, Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast.
And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland, Paul Spataro, and Dr. Bill Robinson.
Bloody hell.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, a Two True Freaks presentation. This week, we will be looking at Season 5, Episode 18, A Simple... No, fuck's sake.
And we gave you the stage. We didn't interrupt you.
No. This week, we will be looking at episode 18 of season 5, Business as Usual.
Opportunity knocks.
You want me to sell weapons, don't you?
The riskier the road, the greater the profit.
With an offer Quark can't refuse.
It's no different than selling sandwiches.
Don't ever cross me.
But the price of success.
I haven't broken any laws.
I will nail you to the wall. Is devastating.
28 million dead.
On the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Written by Bradley Thompson and David Weddle and directed by Siddiq El-Fadil, who used to be in the cast. I don't know what happened to him. I'm Andrew Leyland, and as ever, I am joined by my own regular group of Ferengi commerce experts, Mr. Paul Spataro.
I say.
Doctor, not Doctor, Bill Robinson.
I'm just burning, doing the neutron dance.
I'm J. David, but we can call him Dave Wheater.
I'm just sipping a mint julep. Oh, Miss Daisy, I know where you're coming from.
I'm sorry, I'm getting distracted by all these off-cam, off-module jokes, off-microphone jokes. Do we have anything that could vaguely constitute news 6 months down the from when we actually recorded this episode?
I did notice, and again, obviously we're very time displaced here, I did notice that the Discovery has come out on Blu-ray.
Yep.
What, already?
Yeah.
Oh.
I wasn't sure that they were going to do that until after the second season. I thought they might try and...
No, I think we talked about that last time.
Yeah.
Now that I think about it.
No, we talked about the second season coming up. I don't think we talked about the first season being out on Blu-ray.
No, we did.
No, because I thought we were
date
guessing
right out of my ass. It's
going to come out, right?
Okay.
No. Yeah, you did.
Oh,
you
were, yeah. You did, yeah.
Put it back, please.
It's okay, guys.
Kind of smells.
It's okay. Paul's getting old. Shh.
And I thought getting it smelled old. Bad on the outside.
There's nothing that... I'm not getting anything. I've been old in a while.
Just humor him. Just humor him. He'll be okay. I do it all the time on bins.
I'll get you, Bill.
And your little dog, too?
Oh, dear. All right. Business as usual.
You know what? I'm not the one walking around with ruby slippers on, Bill.
.com.
They're very comfy. The ruby slippers are very comfy. I'll have
the,
you know.
The ruby flippers? What?
Ruby flippers. The ruby right flippers.
Now, right now, I picture Andy sitting at his computer desk with like a little fairy outfit on.
And big ruby flippers.
Yeah,
and
flippers
Angela all over the goes, walls.
The fairy wings and everything, but totally like unshaven.
And then he turns to Angela and says, I say, Angela.
Could you bring me a pot of tea?
Bring me a tea and a crumpet.
She is the crumpet. The Ruby Flippers are the Sea Devils synchronized swimming team. Did you know that?
No, I did not. My only knowledge of synchronized swimming is from Saturday Night Live with Christopher Guest and Martin Short.
That was hilarious.
I know you. I know you. No, you're not angry at him.
Anyway, it's business as usual, which is also the title of the episode. But this originally aired on April 7th, 1997.
Wow.
Quark and Jadzia Dax are playing Tongo in the bar, but the Ferengi's heart isn't in it. His debts are mounting, and he will soon have to sell his establishment. Quark's cousin, Gala, enters the bar and offers to help him out with his predicament. Quark knows immediately what the Enterprise is, selling weapons. Gala tells him that no weapons will be brought to Deep Space Nine, as Odo would stop them. Instead, Quark will use his skills with customers to display holographic versions of the weapons in the holosuites. The weapons will be supplied by the suavely sinister Haygarth. Suavely sinister.
Wow. Victor Maitland.
Gala can't. Is he suavely sinister as well? Oh, no, that was Stephen Burkoff, yeah, sorry.
There's something about him that's really disturbing, but we'll talk.
Everything about him is really disturbing. Gala claims the money will help him pay off his debt, help renew his business license, and enable him to buy his own moon.
That's no moon.
Quark turns out to be a natural at selling weapons, and the scheme becomes quite profitable, but it quickly alienates Quark's former friends, particularly Jadzia. Quark's latest client, the Regent of Palamar, who is at war with General Nasuk, says he wants to make a purchase that will kill somewhere in the region of 28 million of his opponent's people.
Quite disturbing in his own way.
Yeah. Gala and Haygarth take the matter lightly, but Quark is horrified at the idea of being responsible for so much death. Quark realizes he must find a way to escape with his life and avoid being part of the genocide program. He invites General Nusuk to the station on the pretense of supplying weapons to both sides, inspired by Haygarth's previous dealings. He arranges for representatives of the two sides, the Regent of Palamar and General Nasuk, to encounter each other in a cargo bay, making himself conveniently absent in the process. A firefight ensues and they leave the station in pursuit of the double-crossing Gala and Haggarth. Quark's friendship with Jadzia is renewed, but his financial woes are not over. Sisko makes him pay for damage ensuing from the firefight. Meanwhile, O'Brien's new son, Kira Rushi, is going through a phase where he'll cry without fail when the chief puts him down. He tries to bring his son to work and even plays darts whilst holding him, but eventually he's forced to take some time off. The phase soon passes, giving O'Brien an opportunity for some much-needed rest. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da!
That subplot was awful.
There's a funny moment with Worf.
Mm-hmm. But it wasn't, I was groaning because Katie, my oldest, she was a colicky baby and just cried and cried and cried.
And then she turned 20. Or at least I'm sure it felt like
that. And then she went off to college. Yay! There was much rejoicing.
But, I know what that's like. Melissa was colicky, too, when she was born. But it's just, I didn't need to relive it on a Star Trek
episode. Maybe that's really what it was. You're like twitching going,
And you know what? At some point, you put the baby down and you say, cry yourself to sleep. You don't walk around for days carrying the baby. It's not possible.
And taking it to work and playing darts with it. And I'm sure having it in a pub is perfectly reasonable.
Yeah.
Anyway, this episode was mostly pretty good with a horrible subplot. I personally think it is saved massively by Stephen Burkoff as Haygarth, who never met a piece of scenery that he couldn't chew his way through and spit right back out. And his performance in this episode just walks that fine line between being incredibly over the top and therefore not threatening, and on the other side of that, over the top enough to still be threatening. Because Stephen Burkoff is just a scurry bloke to begin with. So when you put him in a role like this where he's pretending to be your friend, but you know he'd stab you in the back at the first available opportunity, hell, he'd probably stab you in the face. He's really, really good. And he makes this one really entertaining, I think.
There's something about him, besides his demeanor on the stage, this is going to sound terrible. It really is. But he's got like that mole or something on his forehead in between his eyes that just draws my eyes to it at all times when he's on the screen, and I find it very bothersome. I'm like, go have that thing removed, man.
It's an infinity gem, Paul. You can't have it removed.
It's a soul gem.
Yeah.
He's Adam Warlock, it turns out.
He has no soul.
I don't know. Like I said, I don't. It's terrible to say it. I apologize for my shallowness. But it just keeps drawing my eyes to it, and that bothers me. He is very threatening, and... You know, we talked about last episode about how the killers seemed so ineffectual. The scene where he releases, you know, he confronts the guy who isn't doing business correctly for him, releases him, makes him feel like he's free to go, but then has him kill off screen. It's so much more effective to make him threatening than what they did in the last episode with two assassins.
Yeah, and just the way that line is delivered. Oh, yeah, when he left the station, he had a warp core breach. And you're like, oh, okay.
And they don't have to tell you any more of that. They don't have to come out there and exposit and spell it out for you. You know he had him killed, and he'll do the same to you, Quark, if you try to leave. They don't have to ever say those words because you totally understand it. They made it very, very clear, and they move on from it. So now you know what the stakes are. So basically, Quark needs to have him dead in order to succeed, and you know Quark's not going to kill him personally. So I think it was well done. It was well written as far as how he gets out of it and all of that. Interesting that he exactly got his outstanding debt paid before he did that. He was just about to start taking profit. So now his only debt is to Sisko and the Federation, which is a much more, I guess, manageable situation.
Yeah, the Federation aren't going to blow him up if he doesn't pay.
So it kind of brings Quark back to status quo, financially. He's still not accepted by the Ferengi government yet, but he's back to status quo overall.
I just picture Sisko showing up. Where's my money, Quark? Where's my money, Quark?
I'm picturing him. Quark is on the phone, and Sisko comes up behind him and wraps the cord around his neck. Give me my money.
But no, they did. That line. You know, that the warp core blew up, and, you know, as you said, it's not spelled out, but you know Quark's balls are in a vice, basically. And that actually managed to make me feel really tense. Like, I don't know if anybody ever watched The Shield, but it was about dirty cops who keep getting in deeper and deeper, and it had that same tension for me. This episode actually managed to bring that back.
And you know what? Before they had that line, I was thinking, you know, Quark is really getting in deep with some bad characters, but they're not giving us... They're not showing us the true level of the threat that he faces. And then as soon as I thought it, they showed it.
Yeah.
Which I thought was well done. And Victor Maitland is just, I don't know, like I said, he's just disturbing. But then I wanted to touch on Lawrence Tierney. He seems so incredibly out of place in a science fiction show.
That's just a tribute to his acting ability.
Well, the two things I mostly think of now, he was a somewhat proficient character actor as far back as the 1940s. Mm-hmm. But the two roles I always think of him as is the head of the gang in Reservoir Dogs.
The Thing. He looks just like the Thing.
Well, they say that in it. He looks like the Thing, which he does. The other thing about him is when he was on Seinfeld, he played Elaine Bennis's father. And he's like a totally humorless, threatening guy. And from everything I hear, that's the way he is in real – he's passed away since then. But that's the way he was in real life as well. He just – like he didn't get it. And he was just like somebody you'd steer clear of because he'd scare the hell out of you. Just to see him with alien makeup on and sitting in the chair. Yeah, I need these weapons to kill 28 million people. I don't know. It was brilliant stunt casting in its own way. He's so out of place that it's fun to have him there.
Lawrence Tierney has quite the reputation behind the scenes as a brawler, doesn't he?
Oh, yeah.
He's been arrested a number of times for beating people up, which we shouldn't laugh at. And he does have Star Trek precedence. He's in The Big Goodbye.
Oh, yeah, but that one he was more in place because...
He's playing a gangster.
Yeah, he was a holographic gangster. That makes sense.
Well, the reason that he's sitting down a lot in this episode is apparently he was recovering from a stroke.
Oh. Well, there's a downer, Andy. Thanks.
Sorry. I do apologize. Sometimes the truth just isn't funny. I do apologize.
I hope Ben Grimm never goes through that.
Do you know why he was not a recurring character on Seinfeld, Paul?
I think he actually like scared Jerry Seinfeld. Or he
I was
stole...
gonna say, did he beat Jerry Seinfeld?
Didn't he like take steal something from the set or something?
Yeah, it says. However, when he was caught stealing a knife from the set and later pulling it on Seinfeld in a threatening fashion, it became clear that he would not be invited back.
So I kind of had both. He stole.
Something, I don't think you're funny, Jerry.
And he scared Jerry. It was I mean, he's great on Seinfeld because he's playing the same thing. He's totally humorless, and he's you know, against the humor background. And they make him – he's Elaine's father. I don't know if you're familiar with the episode. He's Elaine's father, and they're supposed to meet him for dinner. And Elaine is late, so George and Jerry are stuck talking to him, waiting for Elaine. And they're, like, trying to make small talk, and he just, like, dismisses everything they say. You know, he talks about how he's a comedian. He's like, yeah, we had a comedian with us in the war. Got killed, you know, that kind of thing. And it's just, you know, it is a uncomfortable scene, and it's funny because it's so uncomfortable. So selling weapons. But, you know, it one thing that I don't know that it sits right with me, and it goes back to the returning to status quo thing, is every time Quark does something that's a little bit despicable, eventually it's like
everybody turns their back on him.
But eventually it's like, okay, we're welcoming him back again. Shouldn't there come a point where they just say, you know, when you have somebody who was your friend, not that this happens often in life, but when you have somebody who was your friend and is no longer your friend, that's usually the end of it. You know, you don't just keep saying, oh, okay, you're welcome back again. And it's not just a one-on-one personality conflict where, you know, people have arguments all the time. This is something major that goes on. You know, he sold them out and Jadzia almost lost her symbiote. He sold them out and invaders came onto the station. He sold them out and there's all sorts of weaponry going on. You know, sooner or later, they got to say, you know what, Quark, you have bad judgment. You're a toxic personality. Goodbye. I'm not dealing with you anymore. And not forgive him. But we always go back to the status quo and then we pretend like he didn't do all these things.
I think this one earns that return, though. Because I think we see in this one his conscience quite clearly getting the better of him when he realizes just how many people are going to die because of what he's doing. I don't disagree with you about the other times, and there does come a point where you think they just kick him out the airlock. But in this one, I bought it completely because I felt Sisko's anger at everything that was going on, and Kira just gives him daggers. But I really bought that he felt, no, this is too much for me. I'm not going to be responsible for everybody's death.
Shouldn't there be somebody in the crew who says, I don't care, I'm not forgiving him?
Yes, there should be. But even Deep Space Nine doesn't want to go that way. Yeah, you'd think Worf barely tolerates
it. Isn't it? You have no honor. But, you know, Kira, like, she's got a moral foot to stand on, kind of, because she's like, well, yeah, we don't want to press anything, you know, Haggath sold weapons to us, so, you know, we owe him. And then she's going to be judgmental of Quark. I said, you know, maybe you should recuse yourself from this whole discussion. I don't know. It's just my opinion.
Well, she did to some extent. She kind of said her thing, and for the most of the episode, she was inactive.
Right.
At best.
Yeah, now, Kira's been conspicuous by her absence a lot recently, hasn't she?
Well, she just had a baby, too.
Because she just had the baby, yeah.
Yeah.
Kiyoshi.
Yeah, she just had Kiyoshi. Yeah, that's right. Well, maybe she should go tend to that kid so he'll shut up.
You sexist bastard.
Well, why is Miles walking around carrying that kid everywhere?
Because Keiko's off doing something else.
Keiko, let's talk about that. Keiko, okay, she pawned the kid off. She pawned the kid off on another person. Hey, take this kid out of me and put it in her.
She did do that on purpose.
Let me finish. Shut up. I say, old boy, shut up. She pawns the kid off on another person. And then after the kid's born, she leaves. What kind of parenting is that?
It's available parenting.
I know. It's like, well, we can't get the actors, so. Miles, you've got the baby this episode.
I guess in the future they did away with those things where you could put the baby on straps and like have them at your chest and you have your arms free, whatever they call those things.
They don't have daycare on Deep Space Nine, or like
apparently not. No, the O'Briens are the only ones with kids. Remember, all the other kids got taken off the station.
You know, you can't just take them to the pub and slip them a Mickey, and you know,
what?
Kids out. Yeah.
Doctor Bashir doesn't have something to make this kid sleep.
Psst. Hypo spray and done.
Just bring out the little psst. You know,
maybe Bashir could genetically engineer him.
Speaking of, can I? Because you brought it up so perfectly. When they're playing darts in the bar, Miles O'Brien, just in front of everybody, like it's not a private matter, says, "Oh, he's genetically enhanced."
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't think that was going to be publicly known.
No, he was talking to the baby.
Yeah, but anybody could
hear
him.
Very loudly.
Yeah, with Starfleet personnel around him.
Yeah, there was lots of people watching the darts match. I mean, I don't know why darts is up there with golf as one of those boring sports in the world to actually watch. But there were people engrossed in this darts match because entertainment's on DS9's at a premium, I presume.
I mean, but, yeah. if only they had some place to go that they could enjoy themselves, like, oh, say, a holodeck. Oh, but wait, that's being used to sell weapons. Never mind.
Yeah, maybe the guy who caught McCoy trying to charter the ship would have been there to hear him. But wait, you're genetically enhanced? Perhaps you should keep your voice down.
Genetic enhancement is forbidden!
That's where I was going to go. I just want to see that guy bartering with Quark for the price of a drink. Drink name, price name.
It's that'll cost you two strips of latinum.
Latinum! Latinum is forbidden!
I still think that guy looks like Vincent Price, but that's just me.
I think he looks like a giant lionfish.
So, anyway. Yeah, when he gives the baby to Jake, really doesn't give it much of a chance to let Jake calm him down at all, does he?
Well, Jake also gets that panicked look, and you realize Jake's out of his depth.
Yeah, that, like...
Maybe Jake shouldn't have been babysitting at all if he can't handle a baby crying for 30 seconds.
Exactly. That's why he's taking him back.
I'm out. I got a book to write.
That I've been working on for years. He's like Brian from Family Guy, isn't he? Is this book ever going to get written? Mm-hmm. How's that book going, Bri? Mm-hmm. Enemies become friends. Friends become enemies. Mm-hmm.
Strong protagonist.
Go get me another space vampire and I'll finish the book.
lots of pages.
Mm-hmm. This is have a three-strike structure. Mm-hmm.
So I did like Quark as a salesman, though. When he's up in the holodeck and he's selling the weapons, I liked his demeanor and how he's quick on it. The quick recharge is one of the most popular features, and I thought he did a good job of presenting that aspect of his character.
Well, yeah, he was in his element, that's for sure. He was smooth, he was happy, he was content, and the idea, the way that they circumvented the laws was actually really, really intelligent.
Yeah,
a lot of times when they tell you, you know, oh, this guy is, you know, he's a silver tongued devil, or he, you know, he does this. Like, they tell you what their strengths are, but you never really see it on the shows. And then when you do see it, you say, that doesn't seem so special. You know, but this actually did. Like, you could see, okay, he is really good at, you know, selling things. You know, he struck me as your typical salesperson, only very knowledgeable about his product and just presenting it enough, not a forceful sell. I don't know. I just thought he did it really well.
Mm. He could sell ice cubes to an Inuit.
I say. I'm just going to keep going back to that every once in a while. Anyway, what else we got on this?
Nothing, really. The B plot is crap, apart from the bit where Worf doesn't want to give the baby back. That was funny.
But it was also...
You know what else is funny as well? Go on.
I also thought that was a sweet moment, that he's like, you know, I didn't have this with Alexander.
Yeah, it is really good. And the other bit that genuinely made me chuckle, when O'Brien falls asleep and Worf leaves, he just tucks the bottle of milk under O'Brien's arm. I don't know why that made me laugh so much, but it did.
Not all at once, guys.
Well, I had one more thing, but I'll save it for when we get to the quote section. So
I didn't figure out my quote of the day yet.
Oh. So are we going to ratings quotes? We're going to do quotes after Blaine or before Blaine or... How do we do the show again?
We do. I think the quotes and then we rate and then Blaine. And do we have an email?
Nothing. I don't think anything that we're ready.
Did we read? Yet. Well, there's one from Faith, but
yeah,
I don't.
We've not got that yet.
We haven't?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I see now. Never mind. You going to rate Andy?
3. Mainly because of the Quark plot. I would deduct 0.5 for the O'Brien subplot, but I'm not that mean. I'm tempted to give it another 0.5 just for Stephen Burkoff.
Yeah, that man's basically a human goat. He will chew up the scenery.
He was brilliant, wasn't he? I loved him in this.
I love the scene where he's like,
I'll settle with 3.
I love the scene where he's like, you're going to serve this, Quark? Well, of course you should. It's delicious.
I really feel like once again, we're just slowing things down as far as the main overriding plot of the season, and that bothers me a little bit. But looking at the episode on its own, I probably would say it's average. Probably it might be a little better than average based on the main plot, but it's brought down to average by the subplot. But then it's brought up slightly by Stephen Burkoff and Lawrence Tierney, so I'm going to go with a 3.
I'm going to be that one again. I'm going to give it a 2.5 because I thought Quark's moment of conscience came way too late in the episode. Once you start actually seeing the number, that's when he's like, I got to do something. Well, what did you think the weapons were doing before that, Quark?
He thought they were all being used for defensive purposes. That's what he argued, and I think he convinced himself of that.
Yeah,
weren't being used to kill innocents.
I think that's the key phrase. He convinced himself of that.
Yeah.
And when he's confronted with the death of 28 million, he suddenly can't pretend that he doesn't know what's going on anymore.
Oh, okay. I'll accept that, and I'll bump it up to a 3. I'll stay with the 3. Keep the theme.
Well, it sounds like we're all going with 3. I mean, even though it was kind of an average episode, it's the guest stars that raise it. So,
Armin Shimmerman.
Oh, yeah. Yes. So, three taken back Tonga wheels.
Are we at the point now, though, where there isn't a truly awful episode? Haven't we got past that now? Aren't we at the point now where The Next Generation was in series 3 and 4, where it's at least entertaining on some level?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say average at worst is where we're at now.
Well, we'll see. That's what it's been this season. I mean, I think the worst episode ratings-wise was The Begotten and The Ascent. And those were not bad. Those were average.
I think that's the problem now, is that you have these excellent 5-star episodes, and then when they do a standard average episode, it seems that much less in comparison.
From a certain point of view.
Yeah.
So are we off to Blaine or quotes?
Yeah, I guess we're up to quotes now. And my quote is, 28 million dead? Can't we just wound some of them?
Damn you, that was mine as well.
I like when Sisko, when Quark is sitting in the security office, and he's like, oh, better luck next time. And then Sisko grabs him and whips him around and says, you better hope there isn't a next time, mister. I have cut you a lot of slack in the past. I have looked the other way once or twice when I could have come down hard on you. But those days are over. Now we may not be able to get you for selling weapons, but you so much as litter on the promenade, and I will nail you to the wall. And he didn't hyperventilate either.
I was just going to say he did it without hyperventilating, which is amazing.
He was very scary. And in that same scene, it's almost like when Odo looks at Quark when he's getting ready to walk out, that Odo is disappointed in Quark, is the look that I got from Mr. Auberjonois. Did you guys feel that or no?
Yeah, I think he is a little bit disappointed in it.
Like he's not satisfied that they caught him.
I hadn't thought of it, but I think you're right.
Yeah. Oh, my quote. Don't stop till you see smoke coming out.
I notice a trend with your quotes, Dave.
Yeah, I have problems.
Okay, well, that said, we've rated it, we've quoted it. What else do we have to do?
Blaine, blah, 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 Blaine says, blah, 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 Blaine says, what does Blaine say, what does he say?
Blaine says, hi, guys. Armin Shimmerman has said time and again that he considers Quark the most ethical man on the station. It's not human ethics, but he has a set of ethics that he adheres to. This is a great demonstration of that, as he orchestrates his own potential financial ruin to avoid 28 million unnecessary deaths. It also gets him out of debt, which, again, puts things in motion for the future. We've got a great guest cast and some nice dialogue, and Quark loses friends on the station. He doesn't really lose friends, though. They come back at the end. It's all like, you know, we forgive you for all the people who did die because of you, because you saved those other people.
Come back, Quark. Come back. Oh, sorry. That was what Blaine said. That was what Blaine said. That's what he said. Blaine said. Blaine said. Blaine said.
I'm not entirely sure this is scanning. I think you may go back to the drawing board and think about it again for next week.
Yeah.
Blaine. Said.
Yeah, I thought it was something when I started podcasting that there was so much singing on board. Now I'm just like, it's gone to another level with the harmonizing.
Yeah.
Just an old-fashioned Blaine song. Coming down in three-part harmony.
I do think Blaine has a really valid point about the ethics, and that Quark does follow those ethics. He knows where his line is.
Mm.
And he's, you know, there's profit, and then there's killing that which would build profit. Because even by the Ferengi rules of acquisition, killing 28 million people is killing 28 million customers.
True.
Right, and a business would never sell a product that could possibly... Wait, never mind.
Uh-oh.
Pass me a cigarette.
All right, full of energy.
Yeah,
we're just all of that said, what are we doing next time?
Next time, an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets. Somebody I don't remember returns to Deep Space Nine to tell us he's dying. It's ties of blood and water.
The truth was buried long ago.
Gamor may be the only hope left.
Now, Kira must face it.
We want him back.
Or face the consequences on the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
All right, bye, everybody.
See ya.
I say goodbye. That was a terrible Terry Thomas. So much
you sounded
Dave.
Like Thingy. Who was the cartoon character, the pink one?
Pink not the pink answer.
No, the pink one. Snagglepuss.
Snagglepuss. That was it.
I say goodbye, even.
Heavens to hilarity.
Listen to the Prophets at Deep Space Nine podcast is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
Lost Tyree, lost Hutch, they came from behind!
You know, that's one of the sites I... Wait, never mind.
Camefrombehind.com. Is that where you went to?
Gold Leader. Goldleader.com.
Impactedonthesurface.com.
Look at the size of that thing.
.com. Are we just going to put .com behind everything now?
Got the chatter.com.
Judge me by my size, do you .com.
It's a feeling I've not felt since .com. Hashtag, it's a feeling I've not felt since .com.